Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
More than 100 investigators have spent the last 72 hours combing through the life of 64-year-old Stephen Paddock to produce a profile of someone I will call disturbed and dangerous. What we know is Stephen Paddock is a man who spent decades acquiring weapons and ammo and living a secret life, much of which will never be fully understood. He meticulously planned on the worst domestic attack in United States history. As many of you already reported, Paddock rented a room at the Ogden Hotel in downtown Las Vegas. This has been confirmed. Okay? Reasons that ran through Paddock's mind is unknown, but it was directly during the same time as Life is Beautiful. We have received, recovered evidence from that location. We don't know if it is evidence, but we have recovered items and video evidence. And I don't want to, you know what, I'm using the wrong term. Evidence is not the term. We have recovered video from there to review Mr. Paddock's actions while he was there. Now, it's important for you to understand, this was not, the rooms were not rented by the Ogden. It was done through Airbnb. By a private owner unknown to the Ogden. So we have very great cooperation from the owners of Life is Beautiful and the Ogden, and they're in full cooperation. Look at this. I mean, you look at the weapon obtaining, the different amounts of tannerite available. Do you think this was all accomplished on his own? Self-value, face value. You got to make the assumption he had to have some help at some point. And we want to ensure that that's the answer. Maybe he's a super guy. Maybe he's, you know, a super Yahoo that was working out all this on his own. But it'd be hard for me to believe that.
And to that, do we need to ask?
Here's the reason why. Put one and one together, two and two together. Another residence in Reno with several firearms, okay? Electronics and everything else associated with large amounts of ammo. A place in Mesquite. We know that he had a girlfriend. Do you think this is all self-facing? Individuals are just without talking to somebody. It was sequestered amongst themselves. I mean, come on, folks.
All right, the mystery continues. Glad you are with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. We're in Vegas again today. News Talk 720 KDWN. I mean, this is beyond a mystery. You're talking about there's less known about this guy, less than we can discover about this guy than any one human being. It's so it seems on the face of this earth. But they are making progress, and bit by bit, we're beginning to put the pieces together. You know, who is this guy, Stephen Paddock? Why did he do what he did here? What motivated him? Now, you just heard the sheriff, Las Vegas Sheriff Joseph Lombardo, and they held a press conference again earlier today. The very latest is, yeah, we know he's disturbed and dangerous, living a very secret life that we may never fully understand. This was premeditated, meticulously planned in every way possible. He had spent decades acquiring weapons and ammunition. We know he had 50 pounds of explosives and 1,600 rounds of ammunition. He did rent the second room in downtown Vegas, the Ogden, and that room was rented by him, and that's been confirmed. We have a timeline that we want to share with you. It's actually the cops got there faster than I had originally thought. I mean, they actually got to, it was 17 minutes, I'm sorry, 12 minutes when they got to the, or 11 minutes, 12 or 11 minutes to the 32nd floor. But it just so happens there had been two police officers that were taking care of another matter at the Mandalay Bay. And they heard about it. First, they went outside because they thought it was a different location. Then they went in, back inside, and they actually made it in 7 minutes to the 31st floor and then realized the gunfire was coming one floor above them. The shots fired lasted entirety about 10 minutes from 10:05 to about 10:15. And let's see. What is Linda saying in my ear? And so much more that is happening. Anyway, so we have then the other issue we have, a security officer who was shot tells the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department the exact room location that happened then. Eight additional officers, again, this is about 15 minutes after the original shooting, arrived on the 32nd floor and begin to mow down the clearing every room, looking for injured people. And so on and so forth. You know, you think about this, these two officers that were actually at the hotel and they hear this and they went up, they weren't in SWAT gear. They knew that this sounded like an automatic weapon, technically not an automatic weapon. We can get into the specifics of that later on, but that's what happened. One of the things that scares me a little bit, and it does go into a little bit of this gun debate, is they found the 50 pounds of what's called tannerite. It was described to me by one of the people on the terrorism task force here in Nevada and that I spoke to at length last night, that it could serve as napalm, if you will. In other words, they're not sure. They're unable to find a source measuring how far an explosion of that much could spread. But in September of 2016, a bomb had exploded in Chelsea, in the Chelsea section of New York City. And it used an explosive, this explosive called tannerite. And the compounds in tannerite are generally made up of an oxidizer, such as ammonium nitrate. You may remember that from the Murrah building, the federal FBI building down in Oklahoma City, and aluminum and another metal-based powder, and only become an explosive when they are combined. And the ATF advised that once mixed, the compounds are highly explosive. You know, I did some research, and what we saw is a video claiming what looked like a car loaded with 50 pounds of tannerite going off. Now, tannerite is popular for target practice because it produces a loud bang and a puff of smoke when hit with a fast-moving bullet. So although tannerite was designed to produce a relatively small explosion for safety, people have used it and have been seriously hurt and even killed using it. And now you're talking about 50 pounds of the material. In most cases, that happened when it's detonated inside a container with fragmented, you know, shrapnel flying out in all different directions. So we're watching that. Now, there is the big mystery, too, of this girlfriend that we really can't seem to get a hold of. The gunman who opened fire, anyway, he had sent her on a trip, which was odd to her. Her attorney gave a statement. I knew Stephen Paddock as a kind, caring, quiet man. Mary Lou Danley is her name, Paddock's girlfriend, said in a statement read by the attorney, he never said anything to me or took any action that I was aware of, that I understood in any way to be a warning that something horrible was going to happen. Now, Danley was out of the country when Paddock carried out this rampage. She returned to Los Angeles Tuesday night. She said she's devastated by the deaths and the injuries that have occurred. My prayers go out to the victims and their families and all those who have been hurt by these awful events. And Danley said that she left the country because Paddock bought her a ticket to visit her family in the Philippines, which then explains why maybe the $100,000 was sent there. And while there, she said Paddock wired the money that he explained was meant to help her purchase a home for Danley and her family. She said, I was grateful, but honestly worried that first the unexpected trip home and then the money, she thought he was breaking up with her. And it never occurred to her that he was planning this sort of thing. Anyway, Danley pledged to cooperate with authorities, and I'm sure we'll find out more in the days, weeks, and months ahead if she has any involvement at all. She's certainly still considered a person of interest, and the police department has said as much. Now, we have some other surrounding issues involving this, and that is, you know, the fact that they encountered a closed bedroom door when they actually got to the 32nd floor. No one was inside. None of the cameras were recording. We had heard an awful lot about the food cart outside of the shooter's door. And the food cart did, in fact, it was wired for video, but no video was being taken. And one of the cameras was on the peephole in the front door. You had two cameras on the cart. You had one of those baby camera monitoring things in the living area. And through the peephole in the hallway, he could see the security guard approaching. Now, they have search warrants on the suspect's vehicle, 10 one-pound containers of Tannerite, two 20-pound containers of Tannerite for 50 pounds total, 1,600 rounds of ammunition in the car. And, you know, having not understood the trigger points of what would cause this, they haven't been able to count the rounds yet. It's not a suicide note. And they did not see another individual with Paddock when he was gambling in terms of the early footage that they've been able to gather. So that's pretty much the latest about what we know. Now, we do know a few other things here that investigators are now looking for some mystery woman that was spotted with Paddock just before the massacre. This was NBC News' report. They said the FBI is trying to track down the so-called mystery woman spotted with him in the days prior to the attack. They don't know if she had any connection to the attack, but they'd like to speak with her as they build this timeline of his last days. And as we pointed out, the girlfriend was out of town. Gateway Pundit added that the Mandalay Bay room service receipt for Paddock's room, and I see the Washington Examiner now actually has copies of it, and a couple of times that he ordered room service, and it's like the first question that they always ask you, you know, is this, will you be dining with, how many people will be dining? I mean, I got every single time I ordered room service since I've been here, they ask the question, how many people will be dining? So you say one. Well, the check says two. So was there somebody else in the room? Now, some people said that the brother had suggested, well, it wouldn't be unusual for him to order two meals. Okay, but that doesn't give an answer to why did he say two when asked the question, how many people will be dining? We learned today, also NBC in and around the Boston area, that officials in Boston were informed today that the Vegas shooter originally wanted to target Fenway Park. Anyway, NBC News reports the gunman who opened fire in Vegas researched Fenway Park in the months before the massacre, according to senior law enforcement officials briefed on the investigation. At this point, there's no evidence that Paddock ever traveled to Boston. All is known is that he did research on the city involving outdoor concerts and hotel rooms overlooking the concerts. Now, Fenway has hosted several concerts like Lady Gaga, Billy Joel, New Kids on the Block. Most hotels in the area have an obstructed view of Fenway or no view at all. So maybe that's why he came and chose a Vegas location. But again, it doesn't give us a motive. Doesn't give us a reason, a why, a how come. We know the gun store owner says that Paddock brought his girlfriend along as he shopped for a modification device. This is a store owner in Texas who had previously sold guns to this guy. Anyway, he says that Paddock came in 2010, 2011, and says Paddock came into the store last year, inquired about a device that would, quote, modify a gun to make it easier to pull the trigger. His girlfriend was with him. So we'll look into that a little bit more closely as time goes on. The NRA has come out. Wayne LaPierre will be on Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern from Vegas. And they have come out against these bump stocks. By the way, it doesn't turn the weapon into an automatic weapon. It just makes it seem like it's firing like an automatic weapon. It's something you can manufacture plastic fairly easy to do. And whether they're legal or illegal, from friends of mine that know this, what this is, well, they said it'll help, but if somebody wants one, they're going to make one that would be usable. All right, 800-941-SHAWN is a toll-free telephone number. Adam Housley is with us today. We'll check in with him. Also, Dan Bongino. We'll check in with some local law enforcement. Bill O'Reilly is also on the program today. All right, we're going to get the latest from Adam Housley. He's here on the ground with us in Vegas. We thought we were coming back last night, and well, we're here, and there's still so much going on and so much news and so much we don't know. And so we decided we're going to stay another day and report here from Vegas. One of the things I'm actually very, very honored. I have met the doctors that save lives. I have met the policemen, the firemen that save lives. I've met civilians that have saved lives. I think it was one of the hardest things, interviews I've ever done. I had an interview last night on the TV show. An incredible man. His name is Tony Berditis. Married 32 years. And he was holding hands with his wife at the concert. And she got hit in the back of the head. And she died pretty much right there on the spot. And he's an Army vet, was on the show. He wanted to honor his wife and tell her story and keep her memory alive. Just incredible pain that so many people are going through. Met a young girl, just finished her chemotherapy last night. Beautiful young woman named Colleen and her mother, Kelly. And this young woman, you know, it was like a big deal having finished her course of therapy. And her scans, thank God, are clear. And she wanted to go to the concert. She, you know, she's still weakened from all that treatment. It nearly kills you, chemotherapy. And she went, and she was running away. And then somebody saw she was struggling and picked her up and held her and carried her to safety. That's the, you know, I just saw a T-shirt, Vegas Strong. I mean, it's just amazing, the stories. I was invited after the program today. Apparently some people that were victims of this heard I was in town, and I was invited to go see them and meet with some of the first responders and the surgeons that saved their lives. And so we're going to do that. I'm very, very humbled and honored to go down there and say hello to these folks and try and cheer them up. I will do it on behalf of all of you, because I know that's how we all feel. All right, we got to take a break. We're in Vegas, and we will continue. It's the Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free number. We'll have plenty of time to get calls in today. Dan Bongino, some local police department officials will be with us today. Adam Housley is here. Bill O'Reilly will weigh in, and much more as we continue the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program from Vegas. And, you know, I'm actually very honored and humbled that we're going to go down and say hello and meet some of the people that have been suffering and victims of this senseless, insane, and evil shooting that took place here. And especially, I've been so honored to meet the doctors and the police and the firemen and first responders, and then just, you know, everyday folks, just helping neighbor, saving lives, covering, you know, their girlfriends and their wives, and then sadly meeting so many people that suffered and continue to suffer. One bit of news, then we're going to get to Adam Housley. Democrats in the media, you know, they were all, oh, let's go after the NRA, F you NRA, all these celebrities tweeting out, et cetera. Now, the NRA, they were hoping the NRA would come out and defend bump stocks. Now, that's the device that was used by this shooter to make his rifle fire more like a machine gun. Not exactly. It's not quite. It cycles at a much faster rate would be the proper term to use here. But I'm sorry to disappoint you. It turns out that bump stocks aren't going to be the wedge issue that they've been counting on to go after the NRA the way they usually do. Anyway, in their first statement since the shooting, the NRA is calling for additional regulations on this device that was used by the shooter that allows more rounds to be fired by a single pull of the trigger. And the NRA said in Vegas, reports indicate that certain devices were used to modify the firearms involved, despite the fact that the Obama administration approved the sale of bump fire stocks on at least two occasions. Now, you know, Democrats are clamoring. They want bump stocks banned. And remember, they had power all these years, and when it was their time to be in power, they didn't want any real legislation because they thought there would be political blowback. That's just the fact. Anyway, rapid-fire devices, or bump stocks, what they call them. This is what Stephen Paddock used to convert his rifle into not quite a machine gun, just accelerating the rate of fire. Well, they were okayed for public use by the Obama-era Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. This was done in mid-2010. And the company Slidefire patented a shoulder version of bump stock and sent the device to Obama's ATF for regulatory evaluation in early 2010. And they got approval of that device in June of that year. In a letter explaining that decision, they said the stock has no automatically functioning mechanical parts or springs and performs no automatic mechanical function when installed. Now, in order to use that device, the shooter must apply constant forward pressure with the non-shooting hand and constant, basically they're using the recoil pressure with the shooting hand. And accordingly, we find that the bump stock is a firearm part and is not regulated as a firearm under the Gun Control Act, National Firearms Act. That happened in the Obama years. Adam Housley, my friend and colleague from the Fox News Channel, he has been, well, I know you were up late with us last night, and then I saw you on Fox and Friends very early this morning, and then I saw you all throughout the day. You haven't stopped working since I've seen you.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those stories that, in fact, I was talking to my wife about this morning. You know, you don't care about the hours because you're fortunate that you're not dealing with what so many people are dealing with here. You know, so you just kind of you don't even want to complain. There's no reason to.
What do you got? I mean, there's still a mystery here. I mean, you talk about an enigma or a ghost. We're learning little bits and pieces, but not enough that fills in the canvas here to let people right. have some understanding of what was going through this maniac's mind. But they are working on a lot of different angles on this. What can you tell us?
Well, I can tell you a number of things. One, I was reiterated to me this morning that nothing's off the table. You know, it's the one thing I've noticed that's different from when I was in Aurora, when I was covering San Bernardino, which we knew right away that was terrorism, or in a few other things we've covered around the world. You know, this is the first time it's gone this long with nothing of significance that we know of. Now, maybe they have something they're not telling us, but they've been pretty open about some stuff. So nothing's off the table, Sean. The second thing I thought was interesting, too, was since the beginning, I've been told by the federal and local law enforcement that I know, that I trust and known for a long time, that, listen, it's kind of hard to believe this guy didn't know somebody or work with somebody. But they don't want to speculate that, and I'm not going to sure as heck go on the air and speculate about that because we don't know. We don't have the thread to show that. But by looking at all prior cases and being profilers and this kind of stuff, it just makes the most sense by far. And then the sheriff came out last night and said the same thing that surprised him that he was going to say that because they don't have the thread to prove it. But by looking at past cases and all their expertise and all the time done over the years, they very strongly believe it's there. They just don't have the proof. And the sheriff kind of said that last night. Listen, we think somebody worked with him. We don't know who it is, but we believe that this guy didn't do this alone. It would be really hard for him to. So I thought that was an interesting development.
There's this mystery woman that they're looking for who apparently had been seen with him in the days leading up to this.
Yes. The problem they're having a little bit is like you see with any of these events around the world, these horrible things, these massacres, you got a lot of conspiracy theorists, especially that run with the internet. So that unfortunately does muck things up a bit because we've heard some other stories that ended up being completely untrue. This one seems to have some legs to it. I don't know, as another ambulance or siren goes by for a different reason. I don't know. I have unfortunately not gotten a lot on this one. I'll be honest with you. I'm hoping this is a good lead. You know, I have seen the receipt that people send me and viewers have sent me about supposedly there was a two-person, charge in that. You know, there's an easy explanation. I've been to hotels before and seen a two-person charge because I ordered two things. There could be an easy explanation for that. There was an easy explanation I talked about last night on the show about why people thought there were other floors where there was gunfire because that hotel is mirrored.
I want to go through this because actually one of the task force guys, the terrorism task force guys, actually showed me varying illusions on that very hotel. For example, when the sun is at a certain angle, it looks like the windows are all blown out of half of the Mandalay Bay, and it's not. And all of us have seen the pop, 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 pop look at the lower floors. What have people told you about that?
Exact same thing. And actually one of the tactical guys that responded that night I met and spoke with, and he said that also hindered them a little bit because, anytime there's a breaking news situation or a situation like that that's chaotic, people are going to see things and hear things, especially with those buildings. You're going to get echoes. And because it's Vegas and they're all mirrored, you're going to get reflections. So they truly didn't know if it was only one gunman or there were five or 10 gunmen. They didn't know. And so the last thing they want to do is to get their tactical teams in there. Now they get shot. I mean, that makes the situation even more dire. So those reflections did make it a bit difficult. They had an idea there was at least somebody on the 32nd, around the 32nd floor, but they had to clear all, and it was dark, so they had to clear all those other locations in order to get the team in. I'm told they went in through the back door because there was no reports of shots obviously fired on the backside, and that's how they eventually went in, and then they cleared floors that way.
What about this woman that's been reported almost everywhere that apparently had told people in the front of the stage that they're going to die? Have you heard anything about that?
You know, that's one of the stories that we were sent to us early on. I haven't seen any evidence of it. You know, sometimes, again, people can be spooked, and something can mean nothing, and it becomes obviously a bigger thing. I'm not saying it did not happen. I'm saying I don't know anything. Obviously, I had a lot of viewers that that sent me stuff. Check into it. I've made some calls. You know, just hey, check into everything. You never know, especially when you have no background on this guy, really. And at this point, I have nothing on that. But you know, you hope that isn't true, because if that is true, now you're talking about a much different situation, Sean.
Yeah. What are the other angles that we're looking at here? What are the police? I mean, the fact that this guy has no social media presence is a little bizarre to me and to everybody else here. I mean, even though he's a bit older, I mean, the fact is, I want to know about that. I also want to know, where are the videotapes? This guy supposedly was a big, you know, poker player. He liked to play, you know, what do you call it? Poker on the machine. What do you call that? Video poker.
Video poker.
Yeah, so apparently he spent a lot of time in casinos, and he was a pretty big bettor. That means they have to have hours of footage of this guy, don't they?
They do. I mean, they don't need the video. They've got witnesses. I mean, I know for a fact at Mandalay Bay that when his picture popped up on the screen, there were a significant number of employees. Now, there are thousands of employees there, and the agents have made it very clear to me they don't believe that Mandalay Bay could have done anything to stop this, to be honest with you. They found really very little fault. And if anything, they found, you know, the security guard and other issues. They think Mandalay Bay, there's a lot of heroes involved there. Much like him from Mandalay Bay, that's what they tell me. Having said that, when his picture popped up there, a number of them basically said that their stomach dropped, because he was known to be a gambler. They'd seen her, his a companion, Mary Lou, with him. And he generally would be spent some recent time at the pool. There's two cabanas specifically. I've been at that pool there before. Beautiful, nice area, tons of cabanas, relaxing location. There's two of them that are set aside just for people to gamble a lot. And he had been using those two a significant amount in recent months. So he was known here in other casinos as well.
Yeah. All right, Adam Housley, I know you've been just working so hard, and keep digging for information. Anything else new you get, I know you'll have on Hannity tonight, our new Time 9 Eastern. By the way, we don't get to see each other a lot, but we've been friends a long time at the Fox News Channel, and you always do a phenomenal job, and I know how hard you work every day to get the bottom line for these stories you're working on. So thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. I want to give a couple of political items just to stay focused here, although somebody just sent me some breaking news. Let's see what this is. Pull it up on my iPhone. I wish it would go faster. Okay. Yeah, I already have that. All right. The House Committee, the House Homeland Security Committee, gave their first approval to the broad scope of the president's border wall. This is what I was saying was necessary for the president. In other words, clearing a bill that would authorize $10 billion in new infrastructure spending and new waivers that would speed up the construction of the wall that the president, this is the money that he wanted. This is the money that he needed approved ahead of time. As I always said, you always get the tax increase, you never get the spending cut. You always get the consideration for those that didn't respect our laws and sovereignty. You never get the wall built. So anyway, it would be $10 billion. This would be the money for the border wall. And they're starting the process to appropriate enough money to cover the entire cost of what this is going to be, which is a big start. Democrats vehemently opposed this bill in committee, saying the wall is a boondoggle. But anyway, Republicans backed the bill 18-12 party line vote, saying it's time to get a handle on our borders. That is the first good sign. Do I think there's going to be some type of consideration as it relates to DACA? I'm told there will be, but I'm told it will not include a path to citizenship, legalization, or amnesty, and that there's penalties. That's for those people that were here taken into the country by their parents. There is a new report out that shows that Hillary Clinton, she's been out there complaining about Harvey Weinstein. He's a big movie buff guy. And, you know, I guess he was with Miramax over the years and some different places. Variety's reporting that he's now hired a bunch of high-powered attorneys to push back on a soon-to-be-published bombshell story in the New York Times and apparently the New Yorker, dealing with, you know, sexual allegations, improper workplace behavior against him, and a lot of women making the charges, believed to be on the record. And, you know, he's the mogul of Weinstein Company, and he's literally gone out and he's gotten David Boies, who's one of the best attorneys. He represented Al Gore in Bush v. Gore, one of the smartest attorneys I've ever met. And Lisa Bloom apparently was hired. Ronan Farrow, didn't he host a show on conspiracy TV? He did. Apparently he now is doing the story for The New Yorker. That's interesting. And maybe Lanny Davis is going to be a part of this. This is going to be apparently a war. So now that The New York Times and all these other places, he's one of Hillary Clinton's biggest fundraisers. Wonder if Hillary's going to say anything about this. After all, she said women have a right to be believed, didn't she, at one point? So we have a lot of different angles. I got to say a lot of thanks here because we will definitely be headed back tonight, but we're going to go immediately to the hospital. And the people I have met here, I can't really explain. When you meet doctors that have saved so many lives, I mean, they're taking in hundreds of wounded people. Amazing. You hear the everyday person that helped pick up somebody that was really struggling to get to safety during the shooting. Amazing. You hear the police scanners. Amazing. You see what the police did. Amazing. See what the fire department and paramedics did. Amazing. You see all the doctors and nurses that were off duty come flying into work that day. And as one doctor told me, it's a miracle that we were able to save a lot of the lives we saved. It was like triage. It was like a war zone. He described it. And, you know, over 500 people injured coming in at once, gunshot wounds. You got serious injuries here. And they just did an amazing job. It's very humbling when you meet really, this is the America I know. The goodness that is America, the goodness that is the American people. And I want to convey this to you because I'm so honored having had met so many of these people. And we'll introduce more of them to you tonight on Hannity. All right, when we come back, we're going to check in with our law enforcement experts, Dan Bongino, some local law enforcement, Bill O'Reilly later in the program. We'll talk to him about his thoughts on all of this. We'll continue from Las Vegas. All right, as we continue, we're in Vegas. We have some of Vegas' finest will join us. Dan Bongino will join us. We'll get a lot of your calls in, 800-941-SHAWN. We'll get Bill O'Reilly's take, Hannity tonight at 9 from Vegas. Hope you'll join us.
Keep your head down. Go. Keep your head down. Go. Run. Keep your head down. Keep your head down. Run. Go. Keep your head down. Run. Go. Come on. Keep your head down. Yo. Come on. Run. Go. Come on. Keep your head down. Run. Go. Keep your head down, go! You guys go! Get up and go! 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 Run that way! Go! Go!
Go!
Go! Stay down!
Wait till the gunfire stops!
Go! Go! Go!
Wait till the gunfire stops! No! Wait! I don't know! What the
f- Run that way! Go! Stay down against the wall! Stay down! Go that way against the wall! Okay, go, run, 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 now go. Go, run, run, go, go. You need to run that way, it'd be a lot safer. Right, Wesner, run that way, go. Why is there not shooting? Go. Not right this second. Just waiting on a second. What's that?
Blind man, please say a command.
I got five wounded.
All right. One second, man.
Hey, man, one critical with a gunshot wound to the chest here.
Someone help me, please. Please.
Hold on. Hey, sit down.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show, as we continue from Las Vegas. The voice you heard there was yet another hero as this evil and this carnage began, the voice of Raymond Page. And you hear him directing people away from danger, head down during this Vegas shooting incident, and transported some people that were wounded in his truck and got them down to the hospital so they could be safe and secure. You know, we saw some of the footage that was released by the Vegas Police Department, and we saw the heroism there. Then we heard, of course, the dispatch call where they got up to the 32nd floor. Now we know it was, about 11 minutes right after the first shot was fired. Amazing response time considering where it was and how quickly they got up there and what they've been able to do. And every one of these people were putting their lives on the line for others. It does make you wonder that maybe if there's another high-profile incident that involves the police, that maybe for once the American people can unite around the idea that, well, police too have the right to the assumption of innocence, and that we could at least give them the benefit of the doubt. And there's never been a resisted arrest that's ever going to look good on some, you know, iPhone videotape that somebody's taken. It's never going to look pretty. Somebody's resisting arrest, it will never look good ever. But we did have a lot of cases where we do rush to judgment. Baltimore, Freddie Gray, and Ferguson, hands up, don't shoot, never happened. Even have the Cambridge police acted stupidly. A great rush to judgment there. In a sense that, oh, Colin Kaepernick, he can start taking a knee and wearing socks depicting the police officers as pigs. And you know, a lot of people taking a knee with Colin Kaepernick. And I say this because, you know, we need to remember what it is these guys do. We seem to forget. You know, this will be a distant memory at some point down the line. There's going to be a high-profile case, and you're going to have the usual suspects on the left out there, you know, saying convicted. You know, they're the judge, jury, and executioner. No evidence presented. Look at the case in Ferguson with Officer Darren Wilson. He wasn't even indicted. And he wasn't indicted because the eyewitnesses, predominantly an overwhelming number of them African-American, came forward and said it was Michael Brown that reached into his car to grab his gun. And then they testified that he charged Darren Wilson. And Darren Wilson had no other choice but to defend himself. Joining us now, Dan Bongino, former Secret Service agent, NYPD, contributing editor at Conservative Review. Randy Sutton is with us, 34-year police veteran of the Las Vegas Police Department and spokesman for Blue Lives Matter. Welcome all of you to the program. Dan, I know you a long time. It's amazing that, you know, we forgot about what the heroes did on 9/11. I'm assuming probably people will forget here, and there'll be a high-profile incident, and there'll be probably the predictable cast of characters on the left that go out there and attack them.
Yeah, Sean, you know, it's really disappointing. When I was in the Secret Service, we had an expression called get big. You know, when everything broke bad, you were supposed to get big. Everyone else is going to duck, and you have to get big. You have to take those bullets. You can't afford to let those bullets hit your protectee. And our nation's cops, the men and women out there doing this every day, they get big every single day of their lives. And it's a disgrace that they're forced to make split-second decisions. They don't have the luxury of going back and chalk-talking things afterwards. And the first response by attacking liberals on the left, who have nothing better to do than to relook at this over the time and relitigate every use of force matter, consistently err on the side of attacking our law enforcement. These guys and these ladies are the best of us. They deserve the benefit of the doubt, like you said.
Yeah. Randy, you've been on the department out here for decades. I want to talk to you about this. One of the things that came out today is that, you know, every time I've been in a hotel, and it's happened since I've been in Vegas, you know, you call room service and they say, how many is this for? How many people will be dining? And we have the receipts of the shooter, and in three or two separate incidences, he ordered for two guests. Now, some people are saying, well, not necessarily true. What do you glean for that? Don't they always ask the question? And why would somebody say two guests if it was only one?
Oh, I agree with you. I think it's pretty clear that there were two guests. Now, whether that other guest, you know, may have been, you have no idea. He may have called a call girl to come up there since he was planning this mess that he accomplished. You don't know, but it is certainly a lead that needs to be delved into, because, you know, there's a very good possibility that this was an individual who had some knowledge of this crime, and so this is a very active lead that needs to be followed.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Dan?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I mean, just to be candid, when I'm in a hotel room, Sean, I eat like a monster, so I order for two regardless. So you don't know, but that is kind of suspicious. But I'm not, I don't know. The sheriff yesterday has been terrific, by the way. It seemed to indicate that there may be some evidence of an accomplice here somewhere. So I'm not so sure that I want to jump to that he acted alone. He may have had some help, but he also indicated there may have been, or someone insinuated that there may be some radicalization here that happened as well. I mean, again, just being candid, Sean, this is a case, it's an enigma wrapped in a mystery. I mean, none of the pre-attack indicators in my experience as a Secret Service agent associated with targeted violence, none of them are there. This case makes no sense. It's a big puzzle to everyone. I'm sure Randy would agree. It's just a really, really puzzling case.
Randy?
I couldn't agree more. This whole investigation is something that I don't think has been expected by anyone. I mean, we're talking about going down the rabbit hole. Every time that we hear something else released by the sheriff, it becomes even more confusing. You know, one of the things that I gleaned from what the sheriff said yesterday was about a possible accomplice, and also the portion of what he said where he thought that he might have planned an escape route. You know, these are startling issues here, and I think that as this moves forward, I know that they're holding things close to the vest, and I understand that, because if there is an accomplice out there, they don't want to tip their hand. But so law enforcement needs to be given a little latitude here.
Let me ask you. Okay, go ahead, Doc. Dan Bongino, go ahead.
Just one quick thing. Randy's right. Like, the escape route, that makes absolutely no sense. When you plan these kind of mass casualty attacks, to plan an escape route, you don't go in a hotel room. The hotel room has one way out, Sean. I mean, unless you're going to jump out a window, which you're obviously not going to do, which is the door. It's just another thing about this case that is so puzzling and perplexing to anyone who's been a law enforcement professional.
All right, let me ask you both this. So we got the timeline last night. The shots were first fired by the suspect at 10:05. By 10:17, you had two officers on the 32nd floor. I agree with what the sheriff says, Sheriff Lombardo. That is a phenomenal response time under the most difficult of circumstances. I don't think you can do any better considering the distance that we're talking about from where the shooter was versus where he was shooting towards. What are your thoughts, Randy?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked me this question, because not 5 minutes ago, I was given some exclusive information that you're going to hear right now, and no one else has told this story. The reason that the response time was so good was because there were actually two police officers, a field training officer and his trainee, who were in Mandalay Bay taking a report when the shooting took place. Now, they were with when this happened, security, it originally came out as the shooting was taking place at the across the street at the concert. These two officers, along with security, ran out of the hotel towards where the original report of the gunfire and the active shooter was erroneously given. As they were running out, then people had contacted security and said, no, the shooter is on the 31st floor. These officers then ran with security. Now, it's one officer who's a fully trained officer and one trainee. They're the ones that got to the 31st floor. And they're the ones that were there literally at 10:12, not 10:17. So even this response was even faster. And the officer who was with the security officers, he's the one that wisely set up a perimeter and didn't engage because he was afraid of receiving gunfire, and he had to protect the unarmed security people. But he's the one that called in.
Well, these are incredible stories of heroism, and none of them had on SWAT gear to defend themselves either at that time, and they knew it was an automatic weapon at that point. All right, stay right there. We'll come back, and we'll continue. Dan Bongino, Randy Sutton, we're in Vegas today. We'll have more with Dan Bongino and Randy Sutton. Later on, Bill O'Reilly joins us, and we'll get your calls in straight ahead. All right, as we continue, we're in Vegas today. Dan Bongino and Randy Sutton is a former Vegas Police Department on the veteran and, of course, former Secret Service agent, NYPD, Dan Bongino. All right, Randy, let's go back. So they got up there in 12 minutes. In the 13... Go ahead.
They got up there at 10:12.
10:12. The first shot was fired. Okay, you're right. 10:12. So that's an even faster time. They were on the 31st floor. The first shots were fired at 10:05. The last shots were fired at 10:15, 10 minutes after. And 10:17, the officers were on the 32nd floor to pick it up from there.
Well, actually, the officers were on the 32nd floor before that. The senior officer made the decision not to approach the room because of the automatic gunfire, fully aware that those walls weren't going to stop any of those bullets. So he's really a hero here. He's the one that made the decision, contacted the dispatch to get help up there and isolated that hallway until there could be help could arrive.
Wow, unbelievable. And you know what? I mean, you think of these guys, they know they have an automatic weapon at this particular point, Dan Bongino. You know, everyone wants to attack the NRA. Well, the NRA came out today against bump stocks. Can you describe that for people that don't understand what they are?
Yeah, a bump stock is basically a plastic or preformed piece that attaches to the stock that abuts against the shoulder of your shoulders. You're firing a rifle, and it uses the recoil of the rifle to basically push the trigger against your finger rather than the finger pushing against the trigger. So it can lead to a cycle rate that would resemble an automatic weapon. Some have erroneously reported it can convert it to automatic. That's factually incorrect. An automatic weapon, one depression of the trigger, multiple rounds. That's not what happens with these. It just leads to a higher cycle rate, and that's basically what a bump stock is and enabled him to fire as many rounds as he got off.
Yeah, do you support the NRA coming out against them?
You know, Sean, I don't think it's going to help. I'm just going to be honest with you. I know it's not the PC thing to say, but I just don't think it's going to help. To make a bump stock with a 3D printer, take you all of about 10 minutes, if that. I mean, you can fabricate them on your own. I just don't think we can legislate away the evil in men's hearts, Sean. You know, there are a lot of other things we can look at, psychotropic drugs, psychological care in the communities, but I just don't think we can legislate this away.
All right. I want to thank you both for being with us. Dan Bongino, former Secret Service, NYPD. Randy Sutton, 34-year police vet of the Vegas Police Department. Thank you both for being with us. We'll take a break. I know so many of you want to get to the phones here. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Bill O'Reilly will join us at the top of the next hour. Our final night here in Vegas. After the show today, we've been invited to the hospital where a lot of these patients are being cared for, and you're going to meet a lot of the heroes and doctors that save these people's lives. That's coming up exclusively, Hannity, tonight, 9 Eastern, from Vegas on the Fox News Channel.
You're not a good parent if you have a gun in your house. You're not protecting your family. You're a bad parent if you have a gun in the house.
We've gotten hundreds of calls saying, do something. Yes, we should make this political. Now is the time.
What was your conversation like with him? Do you remember what he asked?
Yeah, he was asking, like, who played and what we... Like, he knew that a lot of people knew it sounded like fireworks, which a lot of people did. And so he was asking what I did and where I went.
Did he offer you words of comfort? Did he say anything that stands out to you?
He said he was amazing. Where was that?
Yeah, he was, like, super nice. He wasn't who we see on social media. He was much more comforting.
What did he say that was so comforting?
I don't know, like his tone and voice and just the way he was.
His presence?
Yeah.
All right, those are some of the people that met the president at the hospital. We've been invited to actually go down today right after this program, and it's an honor. We're going to meet some of the people that have been injured, and maybe some of them will want to talk to us. It's up to them. We're not making any decisions, but we're going to go down and say hi. I feel very honored to be invited down there. I can't imagine all the suffering that they're going through, their families are going through. Such a difficult time for them. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. Then, if you have a gun in your house, you're irresponsible. Well, criminals and evil people, they don't obey laws by the very nature of who it is they are. So my question to any of these people, and you can make your own decision. We live in a free society, and with freedom comes responsibility. The alternative to that is no freedom. And that's not what this country is about. With freedom is risk. You drive a car, every time you get in a car, it's a risk to yourself and to others. People abuse cars. They get in their cars intoxicated or on drugs. And sometimes they kill innocent people. In a free society, there are risks. You get on an airplane, you're always taking a risk. You walk out of the house, you're taking a risk. Question is, you know, there's no police force that is going to get to your house in the time needed if something, God forbid, happens. It is mathematically impossible. There are not enough police people out there. So the question is, do you want to be defenseless? The question is, what are you going to do? All these people that are lecturing us, many of them have expensive security systems and acres of property, and their homes are like fortresses. Now, for example, I have security cameras. Anyone can get security cameras in this day and age. SimpliSafe Home Security is an amazing system. And I think everybody should have a security system in this day and age. You get motion detectors, glass shattered, boom, you know, you're notified immediately. But then what happens if it's a home invasion or a robbery or burglary gone bad? Maybe they didn't think you were home. So everybody's got to ask themselves a question. What are you going to do at that point? I've had people that have told me I'm just afraid of guns. And you know what? That fear is actually healthy. A gun, like a car, like anything else, is dangerous. And my advice to people is, you know, I always say overcome your fears, but the best way to overcome a fear would be not just, I'm going to go out and get the biggest gun. What's the name that you like, Kennedy? What gun do you... People have asked me. I said, well, my answer to you is, what gun would you like to be trained in the use of? If you don't want to really become proficient at using firearms, you can get a shotgun. That'll stop somebody. Really don't need great aim in that particular case. Just literally aim right at them and fire. But what are you going to do if somebody has a weapon and they're coming for your children? What are you going to do if somebody has a weapon and they're coming for your house? What are you going to do as a husband if there's 2-3 people and they're assaulting your wife and daughter and son? And you say, well, Hannity, that's not going to happen to me. Yeah, to tell the people that it's happened to. There's evil. Okay, as a country, we've got a nuclear arsenal to defend our liberty, our freedom. Somebody comes into your house, your space, wants to commit an atrocity against your family, kill your family, rape your family. You have a right to defend yourself. Now, I've been trained in the use of safety in a firearm since I'm 11 years old. And I practice as often as I can, but considering 30 years in radio, I have pretty severe hearing loss, so I've got issues of ringing in my ear when I shoot a lot, so I don't shoot a lot like I used to. But I stay proficient in the use of it. Every gun I have is locked in a way that you can't get it. I can tell you where they are, and you're not going to be able to get my weapons. So I just say to you, are you going to say, I'm going to come out with a baseball bat? Baseball bat is meaningless against the gun. You're going to pick up the kitchen knife? Kitchen knife is not going to work against a gun. You're going to learn martial arts? Well, I've been training 5.5 years. It's not going to work if somebody's got a gun at a decent distance. If it's close range, I may have a shot, but it's very difficult. If the guy points a pistol right at my head, I'll know what to do. If he puts it at my back, I'll know what to do. If he puts it on my chest and it's within range, I'll know what to do. If he's got distance between me and him, he's got me. What are you going to do to protect your family? Ask that question. Now, let's say you are afraid of a firearm. I would urge you to do this, and I know people in the NRA, they always get demonized. I know people that own gun ranges. You know what they're more than happy to do? Don't feel embarrassed that you've never handled a gun. Say, I've never handled a gun. I'm afraid of a gun. I'm interested in maybe having one for the safety of my family, if God forbid that happens. But I would have to get trained in the use of one. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to be more than happy to share knowledge they have accumulated over a lifetime with you so that you can safely and securely, you know, be proficient in the use of that weapon, the safety procedures for that weapon. I mean, let's say you're 30 years old and you've never driven a car. I mean, you're going to be embarrassed to say, I've never driven a car. Okay, maybe you're a little embarrassed, but somebody's going to say, no, this is easy. We'll show you how to do it. We'll work through it. By the way, I've been teaching my two kids to drive. You need to drink as soon as you get home. It is a chilling experience. I remember when I learned, you know, my mother worked at a jail. My father was in family court. They both had firearms. And they didn't have a fingerprint safe like I had. And what I would do is, you know, and I'm a young kid, and they saw pretty quickly I was fascinated with that gun. So what they did is they took me down to a range, and I sat down, and we pointed the gun down range, and we went over all the safety procedures, what happens if a gun jams, how do you properly load a weapon, never point a weapon at anybody, go, you know, right on down the line. And so I sit there, and we go over all the safety procedures in great detail. The guy was very stern. I remember it like it was yesterday. And at the end of the lesson, I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to get to fire this gun. That didn't happen. And he goes to me, all right, when you come back next week, if you remember everything I told you, I'll let you shoot targets. And I remembered. All right, let's get to our phones as we say hi to Lee in Austin, Texas. Lee, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. I was listening yesterday, and you had a lot of folks on who were talking about the fact that you cannot prevent these types of shootings. And I felt the need to give you a call as someone on the inside who's working with law enforcement. We are working on a solution, and we are going to be able to prevent these things from occurring. It's not going to come in the form of laws or even technology. It's all based in understanding what are those observable behaviors that match the specific psychological stages that someone goes through when they go from, gee, that guy would never do that, to, oh my God, I can't believe that guy did that. We're not quite there yet. I mean, we're still pouring through tons and tons of case files, but we're going to be able to prevent these things. And the answer lies in an understanding of behavior. It's all based in behavioral science. We've used this methodology to prevent crimes in other areas of American life that were previously thought unpreventable.
But, you know, Lee, I don't doubt all that's going to help. But remember, law enforcement, they have to be right 100% of the time. And these guys just need
absolutely
to penetrate once.
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, you're never going to prevent 100% of everything. But we've seen it time and time again where there are very specific behaviors that are common in all of these cases that occur over a period of time, and they are observable and they get reported, but nobody connects the dots. And what we're working with law enforcement on is how do you connect all those dots together so that someone knows to say, okay, well, we've had a level one behavior here and a level three behavior here and a level five behavior here. We see a progression of behaviors. Somebody needs to go pay a visit and see what's going on. That's really the key.
Listen, we're going to get to the bottom of this mystery. There is something profound underneath this, and I have faith that we'll get to it. These things sometimes take time, but I'm confident that we're going to get to the bottom of it. Anyway, Lee, thank you. Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN. Robert is in South Carolina next on the Sean Hannity Show. What's up, Robert? How are you? Glad you called, sir.
Hey, Sean, how you doing? Long-time listener, first-time caller. I think I've been listening to you since I was a kid on the way to school. But anyways, as a combat veteran, I wanted to just kind of dispel some of the rumors that might be out there. And I know being in firefights, especially if it's your first time, things happen where everybody gets chaotic and you think you see some stuff and whatever. But anyways, a couple things. One is seen videos of people saying there was a flash. There were flashes on the fourth floor. And so the shooter was really on the fourth floor and all that kind of stuff. Well, first of all, it's the City of Light. Second of all, a lot of those weapon systems, you're not going to see a muzzle. You're not going to see a muzzle flash from that far away. 400 meters is not really going to happen. And then, you know, it could be a fire alarm on the fourth floor. Nobody really knows. Second of all, the video of somebody coming up through the floor, they think somebody was on the ground floor firing. Not really seeing any evidence of that, but just you see somebody, it's not the movies. When you see a large flash, doesn't mean that it's a rifle. It's not really reality. And then another thing, I know when people get in firefights, I get it. People kind of go crazy and they don't really know what's going on. They think there's multiple shooters. But when you listen to the video, when I saw it for the first time, I mean, I was shocked to see that on the streets of the United States. When you hear it for the first time, you hear echoes and you think it's two shooters. You think they're talking guns, as they call it. A lot of times, given the vantage point being that far away, the acoustics of that large type space bouncing off the building is going to sound like it's multiple rifles, when in fact, most of the time, it's usually one. So, and then another, the last thing I want to say is that when it comes to this guy having, you know, 27 rifles or 15 rifles, whatever, in the hotel room, I think that's really irrelevant. The guy's not Rambo hip firing M240s off of his hip and trying to get tight shot groups or whatever with a bandana around his head. It's one gun, or one weapon, one man firing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if he has one or 27. It's irrelevant. He's only firing one at a time. So.
All right, good points you're making here. I really want to get to the bottom of this. We got to get to the bottom of this. All right, as we continue from Vegas, it's the Sean Hannity Show. All right, let's get another quick call. Then we'll get to Bill O'Reilly here from Vegas today. All right, let's say hi to Brian is in Tulsa, KRMG. What's up, Brian? How are you, sir?
Great, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. We're hanging in here. The people of this city have suffered greatly, I'll tell you that.
Well, I can understand that, and I just want to tell you it's a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you.
A couple things that I wanted to say, just based on what you were talking about yesterday and a little bit today, you know, the celebrities that are out there nowadays, they're trying to put their two cents for the liberal celebrities, you know, bashing everybody and saying that there has to be gun laws. It's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, in regards to the Vegas shooting just recently, obviously, it's where you're at. It's pretty simple. Gun control laws are not the answer. There are laws for everything. Drugs, killing, rape, theft, all kinds of criminal activity. And guess what? People still do those on a regular basis. Changing the honest American's constitutional right to keep and bear arms will only make these people that are evil more powerful. That's what I believe.
Listen, if you believe in freedom, you got to know something. In this society, you have to take responsibility for everything in your life. That means for your food, your clothing, your lodging, and even though we have great policemen and first responders, I take responsibility for the safety of myself and my family first. It's great if they can help and they get there in time, but a lot of times that's never going to be the case. Anyway, thank you so much. Good call. Appreciate it. When we come back, Bill O'Reilly, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour on the Sean Hannity Show. As we continue from News Talk 720, KDWN, the 50,000-watt blowtorch of freedom and free speech in Vegas.
On behalf of the grateful nation, Melania and I thank each and every one of you in law enforcement. In the depths of horror, we will always find hope in the men and women who risk their lives for ours. We pray for the recovery of the injured and those injured officers who so bravely threw themselves into danger when duty called. And we grieve the loss of the law enforcement personnel who were killed in this vicious attack. Here on Earth, we are blessed to be surrounded by heroes. As one eyewitness recounted this week, while everyone else was crouching, police officers were standing up as targets, just trying to direct people and tell them where to go. The officers were standing up in the line of fire to help those in danger and to find out where those horrible shots were coming from. Words cannot describe the bravery that the whole world witnessed on Sunday night. Every hero saved so many lives. And believe me, a grateful nation thanks you. Our souls are stricken with grief for every American who lost a husband or a wife, a mother or a father, a son or a daughter. We know that your sorrow feels endless. We stand together to help you carry your pain. But we cannot be defined by the evil that threatens us or the violence that incites such terror. We're defined by our love, our caring, and our courage. In the months ahead, we will all have to wrestle with the horror of what has unfolded this week. But we will struggle through it together. We will endure the pain together, and we will overcome together as Americans.
All right, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour here on the Sean Hannity Show. We're in Vegas one last day. News Talk 720 KDWN, our 50,000-watt blowtorch of freedom and free speech. You know, since I've been here, I have had the opportunity to meet many of these first responders, many of the SWAT team members, many of the police responders, many of the heroes of this whole thing. You know, this happens every time in the midst of inexplicable, unexplainable evil. You have people that just... it brings the absolute best out of people. You know, I had this young girl on TV last night. She had just finished chemotherapy and about a month or so ago. And like everybody else, she was with her mom and she was trying to run and because of the chemotherapy and, you know, it literally knocks you half dead. And this young, courageous girl is trying to get out and she just couldn't make it physically. And one of the first responders picked this girl up and carried her to safety. We're going to the hospital later today to meet some of the people that are there. I found out that some people were fans of the show, and I'm absolutely honored to be able to go over there and meet some of them. And you look at what the police did in the 12 minutes or 11 minutes it took them to get there. Not exactly easy to get up to the 32nd floor. And, you know, the guy has a rapid fire machine gun type of weapon that he's going to turn on you the second you open that door. But they go in there bravely for all of us. It's incredible. It's incredible courage they show. We had some of the doctors on TV last night on Hannity. These guys are amazing. I mean, stories of people putting their own finger inside a wound to stop the bleeding for some people so that they can survive and they're not going to need their legs amputated. Amazing stories of heroism. Incredible courage. Under the most difficult conditions. Joining us now to talk about this and more, Bill O'Reilly is with us. And Bill, of course, wrote his latest number one New York Times bestselling book. It's called Killing England. And Mr. O'Reilly, sir, how are you? Well, glad to have you back. And I want to say this, as I look at the New York Times bestseller list and I see you at number one and Hillary number two, well, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't anything but ecstatic and happy that you beat her.
Yeah, I don't think she's real thrilled about it up in Chappaqua. And it wouldn't have happened if not for your highlighting the book and on TV and radio. So I appreciate that. And I think people now are starting to turn inward to their country, as you just pointed out. We're a noble nation. And I think that people are having enough of the America bashing. And even though this massacre in Vegas reflects poorly on the country overseas, the heroism that all of us are witnessing is almost overwhelming. So people want to know how we developed our country, who was in charge, Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, who they were as people. So they're responding to the book very, very well. And it ties in, even though it's a book about the Revolutionary War, it ties in what's happening today. And I wanted to make one more point. People who don't follow television industry, they don't know this, but it just struck me how dominant your program on television is this week. And the America bashing networks, and they'd never admit it, they just wouldn't, but they are. You know, they're bashing Trump, okay, but it's, you know, Black Lives Matter is good, the NFL dissenters are good, all of that, on and on and on. Nobody's watching them. Nobody's watching them. And this is a breaking news story. This is hard news, not analysis. So why are MSNBC and CNN not getting the audience? And it's because I believe that people don't trust them. They don't trust them to tell the truth.
Bill, how could they trust them? They colluded with Hillary Clinton. This to me was one of the great underreported stories. And that was, oh, we had evidence through WikiLeaks of collusion with just about every major news network, cable network, and major newspaper in this country. And then, of course, we've gone how many months now? It's almost a year of Russia, Russia, Russia. And so often they've been proven wrong. And you never hear, oops, we're sorry. Here's the correction. We'll put it on A1 above the fold. That's never going to happen. And I just
never going to happen.
But, I think journalism's dead.
It's more profound than that.
Yeah.
It's more profound than that, Hannity. Look, you and me and most people listening to your radio program right now are very interested in politics and what happens on a daily basis in Washington and around the country. Okay. But the majority of Americans are not. They're dancing with the stars. They're watching the game. They're playing on their machines. They're chasing the kids around the house. This story in Vegas, this engages everybody. Everybody. You don't have to be a news watcher to tune in to find out what is happening. So why aren't they tuning in to CNN and MSNBC? They don't know how ridiculously slanted they are. You know, they heard it, but it's not an experience. But I think that people are wising up, that they're not, it's overkill. The left has gone way too far. And most Americans say, you know what? We're not going to get the real story there, so we'll go to Hannity and the other programs on Fox, or we'll go someplace else. We're not going over there.
You know, when you think back when we started the Fox News Channel and we were there from day one together, nobody thought we would succeed. I mean, we were actually laughed at. The first review of Hannity and Combs was, Alan Combs looks funereal and Sean Hannity has a bad haircut and shouldn't be on television. A buddy of yours, Vern Gay, wrote that. I don't know what he wrote about you at the time. And what I'm seeing, and this does really dovetail into your book, because you took a very interesting approach in Killing England in that it's the major events and battles and conflicts during the Revolutionary War told from the perspective of Washington and Franklin and some others. You never painted them as these heroes that were infallible or perfect people, because none of them were. And we're living in a time, Bill, where institutions are under fire. You know, look at the whole Black Lives Matter movement. Look at Colin Kaepernick is supporting a murdering thug dictator, Castro. He's wearing socks that depict police officers as pigs, and he begins this movement of kneeling. Then it gets picked up in the entire NFL during our national anthem, but they'll stand in England for God Save the Queen. And then we have the battle over monuments and memorials, and let's rip them all down and let's erase America's history. You know, let's forget that there are heroes when evil does come amongst us. And it just seems like there's a large part of the country that wants to rip these institutions apart.
I'm not sure the word large is accurate. I think there's a hardcore 20-25% who believe America is a bad country, white supremacist. That's what they're getting at, you know, that Washington and Jefferson and Franklin were white supremacists. So the Constitution that they fought to impose should be thrown out the window because they're white supremacists. That's the whole end game here. But America back then is a lot like America now. It was divided. 50% of Americans, when the Revolutionary War started, didn't want to separate from the king. They wanted to stay with England. And families broke up because of it. Benjamin Franklin put his own son, William Franklin, the governor of New Jersey, in prison. There was never a detente between the two. So now we have a division, but I put the number now at 20-25%. But why it feels bigger is because the media is behind and sympathetic to the far left. So
the
media is
100%
this garbage. Yeah,
yeah,
they glorify it. I mean, can you imagine this idiot Marcus Peters on Monday Night Football after the massacre and after all the heroism that you pointed out still doesn't stand up in Kansas City for the anthem? What is wrong with you, all right? You hate cops? Is that it, Marcus? What is it? If I were the general manager of that team, Marcus would have been suspended just for offending Americans on the day of that massacre. And, you know, I think, well, guys like you and me, we're making our stand, and we talked about this on television. We're making our stand now. If you think it's a bad country, we're going to challenge you. If you do untoward, dishonest things, if you pay people to lie about other people, we're going to expose you. And that's what happened in the Revolution. Washington, Jefferson, these guys stepped up, put their own lives at risk every single day because they believed in something. And I'm trying to mobilize Americans to learn about that and do the same thing themselves.
We can save the country. Stay right there. You said something in the last interview we had together that I think dovetails perfectly into where you're going. You've got people like Michael Moore and Brett Stevens. They want to abolish the Second Amendment, and I'll get your reaction to that. Well, more with Bill O'Reilly. His book now, number one on the New York Times bestseller list. It's called Killing England. We've got a link to it up on Hannity.com. It's the Sean Hannity Show as we continue from Vegas. Your calls, your comments coming up next. More with Bill O'Reilly first. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, we're in Vegas, final day here today. We're going to be going right over to the hospital immediately following this program and meeting some of the people that have been injured here, which is extremely humbling. When I met this man last night, been married 32 years, he was at the concert with his wife, holding her hand, and she died in his arms. I nearly lost it. It's probably the hardest interview, one of the hardest interviews I've ever done. Bill O'Reilly is with us. His book is now number one on the New York Times list. You know, we're talking about this hardcore left. You put the number at about 25% of Americans. I would argue that might be an accurate number, but the media is certainly 100% hard left or 98% hard left. I argue journalism is dead in America. And then you have a bunch of people that just aren't really informed and are susceptible to bumper stickers and slogans and the playbook that the left plays every election season. But last time you were on, you talked about how ultimately the left, the hard left, would want to get rid of our Constitution. Now, Larry O'Connor wrote a column about how Michael Moore is calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment. Brett Stevens is now with the New York Times. He's supposed to be their lone conservative voice, and he's not a conservative. Once worked for the Wall Street Journal, he's saying the same thing. If they get to that document, Bill, it's over.
It's not going to happen. You need three quarters of the states to ratify an amendment being removed from the Constitution, and that won't happen at all. I mean, most Americans, according to all the polls, they want the ability to defend themselves. They don't believe the government should have the power to seize anything. And I don't think that's going to change. Because if you're a smart American, you know that self-reliance is the key to freedom. And that if you live in Montana or Wyoming or one of these states where there's not a lot of police presence because it's so vast, you need weaponry to protect your property and yourself. And even in places like Chicago, where most of the gun violence is taking place, the laws there are extremely stringent against guns. They don't work. So the facts say that any kind of mass movement like Michael Moore would want isn't going to happen. What should happen is that there are things that the authorities, both state and federal, can do to protect public safety better. And two of them are these. Number one, and we found this out on BillO'Reilly.com. It was almost stunning. And if you are buying a mass amount of weapons legally, like this assassin did in Vegas, that is transmitted to the FBI into a big database, but it's not flagged. There's nobody looking at it. So it's there, but who's looking at it? So this guy's got 50 high-powered weapons bought in a year, and the FBI doesn't know it. That's insane. Surely they have the technology. If something's out of the ordinary, that they are pinged. Hey, look at this in Nevada. Maybe we should send a couple of agents out to talk to this guy. Why he's got 50 high-powered weapons. What's the reason? He's not arrested. You don't confiscate. But you, just as they're doing with Islamic terrorism, you surveil. You
investigate.
Look, okay? So that's number one. We could do that. The FBI has to do that. Number two.
We don't have time for number two. And I'll tell you what. If you want to stay through the break, I'll hold you over. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I hate cutting people off, but we do have the constraints of time. 800-941-SEAN. Final moments with Bill O'Reilly coming up. Then we're going to get to your calls. 800-941-SEAN. As we continue, many thanks to all our friends out here in Vegas. News Talk 720. KDWN, our 50,000-watt blowtorch of freedom and free speech. Hannity tonight. Remember, our new time, 9 Eastern. We got an amazing show for you. We're going down to the hospital. We're going to talk to some of those people that were victims of this horrible shooting. How are they doing? We'll check in with them and the doctors and the nurses that saved their lives. That story needs to be told. 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox will continue.
Look at this. I mean, you look at the weapon obtaining, the different amounts of Tannerite available. Do you think this was all accomplished on his own? Self-value, face value. You got to make the assumption that he had to have some help at some point. And we want to ensure that that's the answer. Maybe he's a super guy. Maybe he's you know, super Yahoo that had was working out all this on his own. But it'd be hard for me to believe that.
And to that, do we need to ask?
Here's the reason why. Put one and one together, two and two together. Another residence in Reno with several firearms, okay, electronics and everything else associated with large amounts of ammo, a place in Mesquite. We know that he had a girlfriend. Do you think this is all self-facing? Individuals are just, without talking to somebody, it was sequestered amongst themselves. I mean, come on, folks.
All right, that's the Clark County Sheriff, Joseph Lombardo, saying that he assumes the shooter had some help in some way, matter, or form. We're still waiting for information about something about the background of this guy. The girlfriend thinks he was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I have my own suspicions on that matter. And over time, I think the American people will discover that there's something, some motivation, some reason that somebody did this beyond just he snapped. There was way too much premeditation in the case. You know, one interesting thing that was said, I mentioned last night that I talked to Tony Berditis. Tony Berditis was married 32 years to his wife, Denise. He's an Army veteran. And I asked him what he thought about all this discussion about the Second Amendment. And he said he would never relinquish his Second Amendment rights. His wife died in his arms. They were holding hands at a concert. She got shot in the back of the head, died instantaneously there. Just the saddest thing, so unnecessary. And for those of you that doubt evil exists, what happened here in Vegas was evil. There's a lot of darkness in the world. There's a lot of evil in the world. Bill O'Reilly continues with us as number one best-selling book on the New York Times, Killing England. And Bill, I didn't want to cut you off. Why don't you go back? Give us.
No, it's very, very nice of you. I'll make this point quick because I know you got a lot to do. We discovered on BillO'Reilly.com, or we were told, okay, that at Yankee Stadium, where you and I have been many, many times, every game they have snipers above the stadium. Snipers, NYPD snipers. I was shocked. And the security expert who told us that was a former FBI agent, and he said that's what's going to have to happen in mass gatherings, that the SWAT teams on the local police are going to have to deploy snipers around the concerts, around the games, just so they can react instantly if there's a terror incident. So that's what I wanted to tell you. That's the second thing that we learned, and I think it makes damn good sense.
I also think, Bill, I would add to this. In schools, we've had a lot of shootings in schools and so-called gun-free zones. I would love every school in the country to have a ex-military, retired police officer in the school. If somebody goes in there, you've got a fighting chance that they can save the lives of these kids. And it is met, that idea is met with fierce resistance. And I frankly have never understood it. We have one school shooting after another. You know, the other thing is, you know, all these people on the left, you know what these hypocrites are like. You know, if you may have been to the Oscars or one of these big red carpet events. I've never been to one in my life, but you can see all the security that is there. All of them have their own armed security guards. They live in what we would describe as fortresses because they're so important and they can afford it because they're all multi-millionaires. The average person, they're lucky if they can afford the $600 Glock that they're going to buy to protect their family on their own property. So all of these people that we keep hearing from that politicize this, their first reaction was to politicize this. You know, they seem to have an awful lot of good security for themselves, and it seems like it's the hardworking men and women in this country that work hard, play by the rules, pay their taxes, and obey the laws. Well, they're left to fend for themselves.
That's what makes the Chicago situation such a scandal. But these are poor people getting terrorized by these gangs, these armed gangs, and having their children have to witness these murders every single day on the streets in these poor neighborhoods. They have no protection. And this is the best example that anybody could ever have when you hear someone say, oh, the government will protect you. So you don't have a right to arm yourself because the government will provide security for you. Just go to the south side of Chicago and look. This has been going on for 7 years.
18,000 shootings, Bill.
People with protection? No.
Bill, in the course of Obama's presidency, 3,900 people died in his adopted home state. 18,000 shootings in the last 6 years of Obama's presidency in Chicago. And, you know, we should have deployed the National Guard for crying out loud. And I don't think Obama mentioned Chicago more than three times in his presidency.
Nope. didn't make a big deal out of it, and everybody should know that the stock thing that turned semi-automatics into automatics was okayed during the Obama administration. Yep.
All right, Bill, we really appreciate you staying over. His book, number one on the New York Times list, it's called Killing England. It's on Hannity.com. Bill O'Reilly, thank you for your time. It's always a pleasure, and congratulations on the success.
Thanks, Sean. We'll see you soon.
800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number as we continue from Las Vegas. All right, let's hit our busy telephones here as we say hi to Glenn is in Colorado on this Thursday. Glenn, welcome to Vegas. Glad you called.
Thank you for taking my call, Sean. Sorry, hope I make it through this. My kids, I can't call them kids. They're young adults. We're both at the concert, and we are very fortunate that they were able to get out without being shot. But unfortunately, two people right next to them were. And what I want to do is kind of have maybe people think a little bit more, and our prayers are out for the people that have lost people in this horrific experience. And our prayers are out for the people that are in the hospital. But I don't think that we're really talking too much about our prayers need to be for everyone that was at that venue. They all were scarred. They've been through something that I don't think we wanted any of our kids to go through. And yet it's going to be in their memory forever. My kids are going to go through therapy or counseling. I don't know what you want to call it. In order to get through this, because obviously I don't have the ability to do it. When they need to go through a professional that can help them step through something that they've seen. My daughter probably feels so bad about it of being standing next to her husband up in the front and had actually moved over to the other side of him. And another gentleman kind of took up where she was at, and that person was shot and hit the ground, and the person next to him was shot and hit the ground. She said neither one of them moved, and all he could think about was run. We're so thankful to have first responders that can run in a direction that is opposite of what human nature is, which is run from danger, and they're running into it. They're terribly remorsed now, thinking that they could have done something. But, you know, I think the best thing they could have done, of course, I tell my son-in-law, you got my daughter out of there, you know. But we just need to think about everybody that was in it and pray for everybody, I think.
Glenn, let me say a few things to you. Number one, I'm sorry that your daughter went through this. I'm sorry everybody had to go through this. I can't even explain it being here. I've had the same feeling, and it's not on the scale, obviously, that I had after 9/11. It's inexplicable, the feeling, but I have it. And it's funny you say all of this. Kaia Jones was on stage with John Rich, and she was on the TV show last night. And I talked to her after the show. And she was asked to sing God Bless America at the UNLV football game this weekend. And she said to me, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can get through it. And she expressed a lot of the emotions that you just expressed. And that is that she feels guilty. She survived. She feels, you know, what else could I have done? And she's second-guessing herself. You know, the only thing I will say to your family, your daughter, your son-in-law is, you know, there are things in this life that I can't explain. I don't have the answers. I do believe in God, and I do believe that, you know, there's a mystery that we'll know on the other side of this life one day. And I just think that for them is they've got to put their heart and their faith in the fact that it wasn't their time, whatever that means. And, you know, for the rest of their lives, I know they're going to be different people. Getting help, by the way, is not a sign of weakness. And to my mind, it's a sign of strength. talking to a pastor and talking to a professional and, you know, maybe just talking to your friends and just going out and saying, I need to get this off my chest. I need your insight. I need your help. And you'll be amazed at the amount of love and friendship that people offer. I have friends in my life that, you know, I can download anything to. So I don't think what they're going through is at all unnatural. This is what our military goes through. Imagine they go through this type of day every day for years on end, depending how many tours of duty they did in Iraq and Afghanistan. Those police officers that charged into that 32nd floor and, you know, literally were fighting to get this guy, they're living through it too. You know, all these people I'm going to go see in the hospital later today, it's never going to leave them. It's a life-changing moment for everybody.
And I don't want to take anything away from the prayers to them or the other people that have lost.
No.
I just kind of want to bring it to attention that there's thousands of other people that, like my son-in-law and daughter, said they had to step over dead people, and they saw things that they, like you and I, probably will never see, and hopefully we will never see either, because it will scar us too. But it's just a really sad thing, and I just hope people realize there's a lot of people out there that don't have physical scars, but they do mentally have scars, and it's just a horrific thing.
Listen, this is what you're talking about is PTSD, and it's real. And we have over 250,000 troops that suffer from it, just having gone and fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. It is very real. There's nothing unnatural about it. And just please know that your family, please tell them I send my thoughts, I send my prayers to them. And to the extent possible, I'm going to try my best to offer just even a slight bit of comfort to these people I meet today. And I hope God gives me the words. It's not what I do best in life. I'm going to try my best. Anyway, my friend, God bless you.
You do a great radio show, and I enjoy your new TV show. And
thank you, sir.
You have a very professional staff.
We do. We have the best people, and we're like a family. Dysfunctional, but we're like a family. Thank you so much for being with us, and you tell your daughter and your son-in-law to hang in there. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free number. Linda, you said you were watching last night. Do you know how hard? I mean, you know me, and you even said it to me, I think, earlier today when I was interviewing Tony Berditis and this young woman, this beautiful young girl. She's 20 years old, Colleen, and she had just gone through cancer, and she got saved by one of the policemen that saw that, you know, she had been weakened from all the chemotherapy. The story is coming out of here, unbelievable.
I actually wrote to your TV staff on the ground, and I was just like, man, you guys are doing such a good job, because I can't imagine. You know, one of the hardest things producing shows like this in the middle of a tragedy is you don't want to ever cheapen what they're going through. You just want to give them the platform to tell what happened to them if they're ready, if they feel comfortable. And I think one of the hardest things is to sit there and someone's telling you that someone they loved for 32 years, they married their high school sweetheart, has now passed away and won't see the birth of their fifth grandchild.
We love all these movies of superheroes. The doctors are superheroes. The cops and firemen were superheroes. The first responders were superheroes. And then just everyday people that just happened to be there and had an opportunity to help their fellow neighbor, they're like superheroes.
I think, when you were talking to the folks the first night, you know, that were, you know, military veterans, one guy had just gotten back in September from Afghanistan. The other guy was an Iraq war vet. I mean, this was a war zone, and all these people survived, and you have a very difficult job because you need to handle it with kid gloves and be as gracious as you can. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard to interview them. It's hard to talk about it. It's really, really hard. The whole thing is difficult.
You know, there is something in life called empathy. And, you know, when I'm looking at this poor man, he's holding his wife's hand and she gets killed, and they're having like a fun time together. It's like anybody that I know that loses a kid. How do you go on from that point? It's hard. And all those mothers that we interviewed that lost their sons and daughters, either killed by illegal immigrants. How many shows have we done on this? How many people have we interviewed that lost their kids?
Too many shows.
How many that lost their kids in war? You know, it's so hard. And all right, we got to take a quick break from Vegas. It's the Sean Hannity Show. We'll come back. Hannity tonight at 9. Among the things, we'll have all the latest developments, new information coming out. and trying to get to the bottom of this evil madman. And we're going to meet some of those people that are heroes and some of those people that were victims of this horrible shooting tonight at 9, our new time on the Fox News Channel. All right, Hannity, we've been invited to go to the hospital. We're headed over there now to meet some of the victims. We'll have full, complete coverage of all of this. 9 Eastern, Hannity from Vegas, Newt Gingrich, many of the people that were heroes, Wayne LaPierre, and much more. We hope you'll join us. Set your DVR the new time at 9. We'll be back in New York tomorrow, and we'll see you tonight. Thank you for being with us.